Welcome to the Missing Chapter podcast, where you will hear some of the least known, obscure, and entertaining stories the history textbooks left out, starring Phil Horander and Phil Schauff.
Eastern Front of World War II brought with it some of the most brutal, unimaginable fighting the world had ever seen. Conditions for both soldiers and civilians alike was killed or be killed. The tide of the war was at stake and the fate of the world hung in the balance. In amongst the rubble and the chaos that was Stalingrad, opposing snipers became a crucial factor in this struggle. One Soviet sniper in particular had destructive consequences on their German opposition, and in the process began to pave a new course for females, a path that would eventually lead her to the lawn of the White House in Washington, D.C. This is the story of one woman and the profound impact she had not only on the Second World War, but the battle for gender equality and the struggle for women's rights. A cup of hot coffee, a story to entertain and inspire, it's the combination you've come to expect and enjoy from your favorite podcast, The Missing Chapter.
Welcome, everybody, to the Missing Chapter podcast. I am Phil Schauff, here, as always, with Phil Horander. Today, we are drinking a lovely cup of chocolate amaretto. Phil, this is one of my, I would say, top five favorites.
You were so excited when you brought this in the other day. You had it gifted to you, and it was like the first thing you showed me. You're like, look what I got.
Yeah. Little inside scoop is my wife and I have this like little inside, you know, gag going with each other that sometimes if I'm at Stewart's, I'll pick up some hot fries, whatever. She's a big fan of hot fries. I'll kind of sneak it under her pillow. So when she puts the girls down, or I put the girls down, she goes to watch our shows, and she got a little surprise under her pillow. She put this under my pillow, like the tooth fairy.
I love it. You ever had the apple fritter from Stewart's?
Oh my God.
The apple fritter is amazing.
Do you know who I got the apple fritter from?
Who?
You.
Oh, was it me?
You were the one that brought it in and introduced me to it.
Yeah,
incredible.
They're really good. If you live in New York and you have access to a Stewart's and you've never tried the apple fritter, try it and then reach out to us.
Yeah, for
and let
sure.
us know how it changed your life.
Now, we've gotten some people email us from out of state.
Yes.
A lot of information from out of state. Now, speaking of that, the unfortunate part of those that live out of state is they do not have a Stewart's.
Right.
So maybe we have to gift them, a Missing Chapter mug and some Stewart's to go with it.
Yeah, Stewart's is like our local, it's a gas station, it's a convenience mart, it's kind of all of that stuff, but it's really good. Their ice cream, their coffee.
Yeah. And you love
good
their hot
sandwiches.
Dogs.
I do love their hot dogs. I hope that's not enough to have people turn off the podcast, but I've been known to enjoy their hot dogs and the free meat sauce.
Oh my God.
Sodium levels be damned. I'm going.
Sodium levels, dairy levels. Fat content of the ice cream. We're all over.
I'm not living on them. I just occasionally like to indulge. But. Yeah,
and
they're really
your,
good.
If you want to add a little gluten to that, they have their own, make your own subs. My gosh, they've got it all.
Yeah.
So right before we went on air, I said, listen, I don't really have anything prepped as far as the intro goes, but I'm just going to wing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're doing a bang-up job.
Yeah. Who knew? We didn't plan the Stewart's hot dogs.
But. No, we didn't. So, Phil, we're going to air this thing late April. So I'm looking at the calendar here.
Yeah.
Late April, and we are about mid-March right now, so it gives us a little bit of hope. The sun is shining, so I hope that trend continues through April. This will be aired a few days before my mother's birthday, so I just want to give a shout-out to one of our loyalist, if that's a word, fans, and that's my mother. So, Mom, you are the best. Happy birthday. We love you so much. From us at the Missing Chapter.
Yeah, happy birthday. Happy birthday, and you're always very complimentary of our episodes, and you enjoy it, and it's nice to hear from you.
Yes, for sure. By the way, she did say multiple times how much she loved your raspy voice during your little laryngitis.
That took forever. And it's nice to have my voice back. Every once in a while, I feel like there's a little bit of a rasp to it. I don't know.
Adds
if
character.
It's just me. I appreciate that. You know, Phil, we haven't done a poll in a while, and I'm wondering because I'm looking at today's episode and it's just, we are all over the board with what we talk about. And I'm just wondering, people have to have their likes, their dislikes with regards to time periods and areas of the world. And we always, you know, encourage you to participate in you know, reaching out to us, letting us know what you like and what you don't. Let us know if there's a time period that we haven't done.
Yeah.
You know, 3.5 seasons, we haven't heard anything regarding this group or this area of the world. What are we forgetting? Because we had someone reach out and ask us a question for a possible future episode, and I think we're going to take them up on it. It was a great suggestion.
Yep.
Without giving away too many details. But, I mean, if there's a person or a topic that you'd like to hear more about.
And that's part of our MO, too, is we love historic variety.
Right.
You know?
100%.
I don't want to pigeonhole ourselves into one time period, so I love that recommendation. So today, Phil, though, you have Lady Death and the First Lady.
Yeah,
and you did a good job leaving us with a little cliffhanger here at the intro.
You know, it's World War II.
Yep.
But it's something that I think it's got so many different layers to
it.
It's World War II, but that's just the top layer to it.
Yep.
So I think you're going to hear a lot of different things that kind of pique your curiosity with this particular story.
Okay, let's get to it.
So the story centers around Ludmila Pavlichenko.
Oh, well done, sir.
Thank you. She wanted to be a teacher. That's how I'm going to start things off, because she had the dream of being a teacher, and there's a great start-to-finish wrap-up here that I think people will appreciate. So remember that she wants to be a teacher. She's born in what is now Ukraine. Ludmila and her family moved to Kyiv when she was only 14. She was a self-described tomboy who was fiercely competitive and really enjoyed sports. And in particular, early on, she really seemed to have a natural gift for sharpshooting. She joined the shooting club at her school. She became an accomplished sharpshooter, earning the Voroshilov sharpshooter badge and marksman certificate. She took a job at the Kyiv Arsenal factory and attended night school before enrolling at Kyiv University in 1937. So you're thinking in your head, 1937.
Yeah.
Boy, in a few short years, things are going to be changing dramatically, you know, in Europe and in Asia.
Yeah, for sure.
So she continued to study history there, again, intending to be an educator, and was a member of the school's track team. She also enrolled in a Red Army sniping school while attending the university. So really, initially, this is kind of interesting. There's an irony in all of this, because she had a love for history and wanted to become a teacher. And as the story goes along, she makes history. She becomes history. She becomes like the most successful in her field in history. So as somebody who appreciated that, for her at this age, you don't realize you're not necessarily going to become a teacher, but you're going to create the history that other teachers will teach.
Wow, that's really
does
profound.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
It totally does, yeah.
Like, she doesn't know that. I mean, but now going through her story, it's like, wow, you know, if you could have told her that, listen, you're not going to become a teacher, but you're going to become the history that people will study.
Like, if you look back
it's
in history
cool.
to the MLKs, to the,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. You could name a laundry list of people, the Gandhis, mm-hmm. the Nelson Mandelas. Do you think they were the ones that were like, listen, I want to change history? Or is it just they were the right person at the right time that had the moxie to do that?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. You have to have the drive. You have to have the charisma. And I think some of them realized, this would be a good debate, like in the moment, listen, I'm almost like a chosen person here that I can pave a path that'll help humanity. While other people, like Ludmila, I mean, I think they kind of fall into it.
Yeah. Do all pioneers realize that they are the pioneers, right?
Is it intentional,
yeah.
or is it something that, you know, history kind of writes for them and we have commentary on after the fact?
Yeah, that's a whole debate. I think that's a missing chapter chat.
So Ludmila was in her fourth year studying history at Kyiv University when Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany invaded the Soviet Union in 1941. She sprang into action. She was amongst the first round of volunteers to enlist at her local recruiting office army. So initially, she was pressured to be a nurse.
Yep.
You know, obviously because of her gender. And she used her background as an amateur sharpshooter, and she used all of the awards to instead join the infantry and become a sniper.
Wow.
So the principal battles she was documented to have fought in, there are two in particular I'm going to be referencing, the Siege of Odessa, which occurred over the duration of August to October 1941, followed almost immediately by the siege of Sevastopol, which was October of 1941 to July of 1942. And it didn't take long for Ludmilla to prove her skills under fire and to create a reputation amongst her peers. So you have a woman who has the background of being able to, you know, be a really good sharpshooter, a really good sniper, at least in training, but now she's proving herself in the midst of battle. So it's like, hey, it's one thing to be, you know, skillful in this, but you can do it under pressure, and you can do it in the face of an onslaught of an enemy. I think that's two completely different things.
I agree. I immediately go to, his name escapes me right now, the movie that the sniper was after.
100%. Stalingrad. It was Jude Law, and it was Enemy at the Gates.
Enemy at the Gates. Yes. Thank you. And I'm also thinking of the movie, actually, is it just called Sniper? And he ends up committing suicide. Oh, boy.
Oh, no, it's Chris. No, not Chris Kyle. No.
Yeah, it is Kyle. It's Kyle.
Is it?
What's his name? Yes. All right. We might have to look that up before break because it's. But I think of him. And the reason why he was so good is because he did it every day.
Right.
He was passionate about it. And, you know, like the David and Goliath story, what a lot of people don't know, that the historical essence of that David and Goliath story, yes, Goliath was this massive guy and David was so young and he was using a slingshot,
mm-hmm.
but he was the kind of kid that was always using his slingshot. There was mm-hmm. thousands of times he practiced the slingshot, and that's why he ended up killing Goliath. Now, if you look at this story, this is not just a woman who's, you know, playing around with guns as a,
right.
you know, a hobby. This is something that she's incredibly skilled
yeah,
at.
Yeah, and you know, it's a matter of defending your own homeland and using the skills that you have. Is that going to translate into actually being able to help your country win the war? Which,
right.
I mean, is a resounding yes. But she's got something else about her, too, that's going to have a far-reaching impact beyond being a good sniper, all right, that we're going to get to. So during the Siege of Odessa, all right, which again was August to October, so you're talking essentially 3 months. She's reported to have killed 187 Nazi soldiers.
Oh my gosh.
Right, and in the Siege of Sevastopol, the second one, which is around 10 months, a little less than a year, she killed upwards to 257 enemy soldiers. And with regards to snipers, they were very specific in their kills. Because they were going not necessarily for like infantrymen, but they were going for high-ranking officers. That's who snipers targeted. So they did have more of an accurate kill count as opposed to other people in the military.
So go back to those numbers again.
So 187 in the Siege of Odessa, and then 257 at the Siege of Sevastopol.
So I just looked this up, and yeah, I apologize for having that mental break there. But yes, Chris Kyle is the person I was thinking of. His kill count, I just looked it up, roughly 320 enemies as part of his service in Iraq. The Navy says he killed 160. I mean, we're talking Chris Kyle kind of.
Yes, in World War II.
Right.
And this is where it gets good. It's good, like, you're good at your trade, you're good at your craft, if your team recognizes that. But you're even better if your opponent realizes that, and they start to have to plan accordingly for you. So at this point, Ludmilla's skills were renowned, not only with her own army, but within the German army as well. Her commanding officers began positioning her in more dangerous missions, which included counter-sniping and duels, essentially, between other snipers. One of which lasted over 3 days.
Oh, my God.
So the German army... This is great. The German army became increasingly desperate, even attempting to bribe her to defect. And you know what they were using to try and bribe her at this point in the war? Chocolate.
What?
Because the Soviet soldiers were starving, and chocolate was a delicacy.
Oh,
so you're trying to play mind games with chocolate. Later, they threatened her via loudspeaker. And what they were telling her over the loudspeaker, they were going to dismember her when they caught her into the amounts equal to each of her kills. And this is where you get really good insight as to who she was and what her character was like. Ludmilla was not deterred. And in fact, she did an interview later on, said she was actually happy. She was flattered to hear that the enemy accurately knew her kill number.
Oh my God.
She wasn't afraid. She was actually like, wow, they actually are recognizing how good I am. So by the time she was wounded by a mortar shell in June of 1942, she'd been promoted. And again, as a woman in the Soviet Army to lieutenant, she was training and teaching other snipers and had 309 confirmed kills.
Jeez.
And at this stage, all by the age of 25.
Oh my God.
Just amazing.
And not to jump in real quick, but I just this is pretty remarkable. And I'm thinking too, we started with this Chris Kyle comparison, but modern weaponry, you can use some very, very high powered,
yes,
incredibly accurate sniping rifles, bolt action rifles that are incredibly accurate from a massive distance, which in my brain, I'm thinking, could it be arguably more difficult during this time period because your distances are much shorter?
Right.
So you are sniping. I'm not diminishing her skill at all, but I'm just saying,
yeah,
you're closer to the enemy than a person who, in modern day, you could be firing from a half a mile away.
Right, and you have to kind of question the accuracy of the tools that she's
absolutely
using, the gun she has access to.
So every time she fires, she knows that the enemy's all that closer.
Right.
So she's going to have to move her position.
Giving away her position, going
right
to have to, yeah. So I think it really goes to this. She's got just amazing talent.
It's just a gift.
And at this point, the Soviets are really fortunate to have her. This is where she takes on a completely different role that's just as fascinating to me, Phil. In 1942, Ludmilla was sent to North America on the behest of the Soviet Union to try and drum up support for the Allies to open a second front against Nazi Germany. The Soviets in 1942 are desperate, and they know the tide of the war in the East is really much falling on their shoulders, but they need a release from that. We need to open up that two-front war, which we talk extensively with our kids. And I just think it's interesting they send her as their representative. She becomes the first Soviet citizen to be received by a U.S. president when Franklin Roosevelt welcomes her to the White House.
What?
First Soviet citizen, yeah. Eleanor Roosevelt. And you're starting to see two strong, influential females forming this bond. And that's, you know, obviously the title, but such an interesting key component to this. Eleanor Roosevelt invites her to tour the U.S., talk about her experiences, and during the tour, the two strike up a huge friendship. Unfortunately, the press at this point was not taking her very seriously. In a 1942 Time magazine interview, she stated, quote, "I'm amazed at the kind of questions put to me by the women press correspondents in Washington. Don't they know this is a war? They asked me silly questions, such as, do I use powder and rouge and nail polish, and do I curl my hair? One reporter even criticized the length of the skirt of my uniform, saying that in America, women wear shorter skirts, and besides, my uniform made me look fat," end quote.
Oh, my God.
So in due time, she would find her voice, and she's finding it with Eleanor Roosevelt in the United States on this tour, famously admonishing a sexist reporter in Chicago. And this is the quote I'm going to leave you with before the break. Quote, all right, in Chicago, "Gentlemen, I'm 25 years old and I've killed 309 fascist invaders by now. Don't you think, gentlemen, that you have been hiding behind my back for too long?"
All right, everybody, we are back from the break. Phil Schaff and Phil Horner here at the Missing Chapter Podcast. All right, Phil, before the break, you left with an epic quote. And as we closed up, we were off air, I kind of took my headphones off for a second like that. That was awesome.
Yeah.
So to take that and visualize that as she's in front of these people as a young 25-year-old girl, to say something like that is pretty powerful. This has got to be made into a movie, right? I mean, come on.
I would think so. And maybe it's a movie we're just not, you know, familiar with. Maybe it went straight to DVD or straight to streaming. But, you know, the reason I left off with that particular quote, Phil, was because from then on, two things happened. Ludmilla found her voice and was much more confident. Because I'll tell you what, that's a sassy response.
Yeah.
Especially, you're in a foreign country, you're a Soviet, even though that you're, you know, an ally of ours at this point, you're still a communist, and people are unsure about that relationship. But she also won the hearts of the media. So after this, they start to treat her differently. And after her tour of the United States, she actually tours England and is drumming up more support from the British before returning home to the Soviet Union. Eleanor Roosevelt would later say of Ludmilla, and here's a quote from Eleanor, "There is something very charming to me about the young Russian woman, this junior Lieutenant Ludmilla Pavlichenko. She has suffered, and is suffering something which is universal and binds all the world together, regardless of language."
Mm.
I mean, that's very poignant. But you're able to see, you know, I think at this point in history, our image of war was very much from World War I, the men in the trenches suffering. and the men on the front in World War II. But now you have this kind of this small, unassuming woman, and she's part of that suffering too. It's changing our image of war. It's everyone.
It's that whole idea of the shared experience.
The shared experience.
So whether you're a communist from the other side of the world or you're an American right now that have experienced war and the real, you know, ravages of it and the and the tragedies involved in it, everyone has a story. Hey, I knew somebody that was on the front lines. I knew somebody that was killed. I mean, you take Vietnam as the example. The Korean War is an example. Anybody who has that kind of connection knows that suffering, pain,
And she was just a different face to all of that. But I think, you know, that it needs to be said, too, that the common language, the ability of a pioneer like Eleanor Roosevelt to really recognize that similar personality, despite who she was, her background, where she was coming from, I mean, that's a real testament to her as well.
Yeah,
and I mean, knowing what she did for history, I just think it's one more chapter in her resume as well. So after the war, Pavlichenko finished her education. And here's some irony that I kind of touched on with my very first sentence. She began a career after her military career as a historian and later became a research assistant for the Soviet Navy. So in a way, she kind of fulfilled that dream of becoming a teacher, at least somebody involved in history at a very young age. And I liked that. Eleanor Roosevelt visited her in 1957 during a trip to the Soviet Union. Ludmila Pavlichenko eventually passed away in 1974 at only 58 years of age.
Jeez.
She was one of 2,000 female snipers in the Red Army and one of 500 who survived. She was also the only one of these women who received the Hero of the Soviet Union Award, which was the highest award in the Soviet military while she was still alive.
That's amazing.
Though some estimate it to be higher, Pavlichenko's confirmed kill count of 309 makes her one of the most successful snipers, regardless of sex, in modern warfare. And a part of her legacy, I'm not sure if any of our listeners are country music fans, but this might connect with some of you, is forever immortalized. There's a Woody Guthrie song called Miss Pavlichenko. And I myself am not familiar with it.
I'm not either.
But it might be something that we go on and listen to later on and try to pick up on some of the, whether or not the lyrics actually connect with what you talked about here today. So,
unbelievable story. As you're talking about her becoming a teacher too, not to make light of this serious situation, but my initial thought was, oh my God, do you think your students know that she's...
I know, and it's just the idea that you're fighting for your country. You're really good at what you do. But your reach into women's rights, especially at this point in history, and partnering up with such an iconic figure as Eleanor Roosevelt, is just an amazing, even without her role in the military, that's enough to talk about her and do a podcast about her. But when you combine the two.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So let me end with this.
Yeah.
Last question. And it kind of goes to our entire theme of the podcast. Why don't we know more about her? What is it?
I think maybe...
It's one of the most unbelievable stories.
And maybe it's because, the Cold War after World War II, anything Soviet is forgotten or pushed out. So I think including her role and her, her image, I think people are trying to get rid of because she's a communist. After World War II, it's no more alliances.
Right,
and
I
think that's part of the reason we've gotten rid of her essentially from the history books.
Thank you for joining us. Until next time,
I'm Phil Schaff.
And I'm Phil Horinder. Another chapter has been added to the history textbooks.